considering of the 2007-08 annual report of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, South African Tourism, and the South African National Parks. So I connect the technology here behind us. However, we do have paper presentations. For the sake of time, we will begin with that. So the Director General, it's up to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. I have the delegation from the Department of Environmental Affairs with me, the DDGs and chief directors, and also the CEOs of the public entities, South African National Park CEO, and the chief financial officer, the CEO of SA Tourism, and the chief financial officer. Weather services, they up and Sandy and St. Lucia Wetland or Isimangaliso Wetland Authority will be presenting tomorrow, but some of their representatives are here today. And I must also just make an apology for two DDGs, Honorable Chair, DDG Ms. Yawich for Environmental Quality and Protection, and DDG Mr. Mketeni for Biodiversity and Conservation. They have been booked off. Dr. Mketeni had a fracture on his leg, and Ms. Yawich has got an eye operation that she had to undergo yesterday. So those two DDGs are not present here today. And I would also request that Ms. Cindy Sankumayo, DDG Tourism, be released before the end of the session, Chair, because there is a tourism event happening on the other side, and we thought it's important that she comes here first today, and then she can then go and run the event on the other side, as myself also is not at the venue. Thanks. I'm going to take you through the DIT annual report. As per the Treasury regulations, the report was tabled on time, honorable members, and copies were circulated last year. And if there are extra copies for members that do not have them, our parliamentary officer, Monomis, will be able to help to get you the copies. But just in terms of procedure, we have been able to table all the reports on time, and also those of the public entities that fall under the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. So I will then focus on the presentation of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. As the public entities, they have their accounting authorities being their boards. They would then handle those presentations themselves. I will not deal with their presentations. The DIT presentation then outlines, who is the person, sorry? There is a, oh, you're waiting for,
yeah.
Okay, but honorable members have got the copy of the presentation. Can I then take you through the presentation? The presentation content, we just outlined here the main objectives of DIT programs. What were the achievements against the 2007-08 financial year as they were outlined by program and in terms of each branch, that is the DIT branches, environmental quality and protection, marine and coastal management, tourism, biodiversity and conservation, corporate affairs, support sector coordination, which includes social responsibility and international cooperation. And then in the report, also deal with the financial performance and the audit findings for that financial year. In respect, then, of the related objectives, as per the mandate, the The first objective was to create conditions for sustainable tourism growth and development. The second objective was to promote the conservation and sustainable utilization of natural resources, to enhance economic growth and poverty eradication, to protect and improve the quality and safety of the environment, to promote a global sustainable development agenda and sector transformation and job creation. And those objectives that we pursued, which are related to, which I would call functionality-related objectives in terms of positioning DIT as an employer of choice, enhancing service delivery and systems improvement, promoting equitable and sound corporate and cooperative governance, and enhancement of a reputation and collective ownership of the sectors. The targets, and then I would just talk to what is reflected in the report as progress, whether we had achieved those targets or not. Under the environmental quality and protection, waste bin, the target was to have the waste bin promulgated. As the honourable members are aware, that the waste bill had gone through recently the full parliamentary process. So during 2007-08 financial year, we were still beginning the parliamentary process. And in this current financial year, the bill would have been signed into law. Then in respect of EIA applications, we had a target of 50% to ensure that the applications that are presented or submitted to the department are processed within time frames as stipulated in terms of the regulations or the amended regulations. 90% of the EIA applications that were presented to the department were processed on time during 2007-08 financial year. In respect of waste disposal and reduction of the permitting backlog, as you honourable members might be aware, that this was a function that we took over from DWARF, and there had been glitches in respect of us going full steam in respect of the implementation of the function. We had not achieved the targeted reduction of 15% in that financial year. And then 90% reduction in provincial EIA backlog in terms of the old EIA regulations. As members are aware, that the EIA, the new regulations came into effect in July 2007. We then, at the end of the financial year, had dealt with 100% of the national EIA backlog in terms of clearing the old system, and 60% having provided support to provinces to clear the backlog. We had achieved 60% clearance at the end of the that financial year. In respect of compliance monitoring system effectiveness, we think we have achieved effectiveness of our compliance monitoring system, and as a result, in terms of and training and registration of environmental management inspectors, we have achieved 877 inspectors that were qualified and registered during that financial year, exceeding the target of 750. We had a 100% success rate in respect of prosecutions. All cases that were taken to court, which related to environmental crimes, we received 100% success in that financial year. And then in respect of air quality monitoring system, we're going to operationalize a VAL, a quality monitoring system, which was set up in that financial year. So therefore, that goal or target was achieved, and we declared two national priority areas. And the ambient air quality standards were also gazetted during that financial year. The guidelines and implementation manual for air quality management also was put in place during the financial year. Coming to the next program, Marine and Coastal Management, the target of 3 relief voyages to Antarctica was achieved, and then the stock estimate on horse mackerel surveys was not achieved because of financial constraints. During that financial year, we had to postpone some of the work in respect of research because there was not adequate financial resources to continue with that work. Promulgation of the Integrated Coastal Management Bill, the bill in during that financial year was in the parliamentary process. We had concluded the whole public participation process and cabinet had approved and MINMEC had approved then the bill then that was then presented to parliament, which now in this financial year would be promulgated into law. Boat-based whale watching and shark cage diving policies were developed and published for comments, and they were subsequently approved after the end of that of 2007-08 financial year. Aquaculture and policy and guidelines was also developed, and if members remember, we then had a workshop with the provincial stakeholders and the fishing community in November 2007, where we also dealt with the aquaculture policy. One abalone farm, experimental farm, was going to be established. We undertook feasibility studies in that financial year and identified sites for abalone farming. But the actual operation of the farm had not been achieved during that financial year. In respect of the regional and domestic MOUs on marine law enforcement, we had achieved 10 and 1 regional MOU, and the DDG would expand on exactly if members are interested on what was entailed in those MOUs. There are 3 SADC protocols that we had targeted to have in place. However, we only managed to have a patrol of one of the SADC regions based on the issue of resource constraints. So the issue of financial constraints during that financial year impacted partly on enforcement work as well as on research work, including our regional programs. The transgressions in respect of the investigations that related to marine-related resources crimes, we had 33 investigations and 77 Section 28 notices in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act were served, and which at least was above what we had planned to achieve during that financial year. 1,500 vessels were to be monitored remotely. We achieved 1,308 vessels, and 304 were inspected. In respect of the financial management system, we have managed to put in place an effective financial management system for the Marine Living Resources Fund, and as we briefed the members in the course of the last financial year when we tabled the annual report for the MLRF, we achieved a clean audit during the year in question because of the implementation of that system. Cost recovery framework, in respect of us being able to charge and get revenue out of what that is related to the functions of MCM from the fishing industry. That study was undertaken during the year in question, but we, as South Africans, we realized that the industry, in discussion with the National Treasury, we realized that the industry would not be in a position to afford fully to pay for the cost of running the function, because the cost recovery, or full cost recovery, was going to be looking at exactly what does it cost for MCM to provide the service and charge then the industry-related rates to recover those costs. And we then, after economic modeling with the National Treasury, agreed or reached an agreement that that was not the most viable option for the South African fishing industry. We have to then look at another model, and we're trying to now compare from international practice what would be the best model for levying the industry in a manner that would be sustainable. Subsistence fisheries policy was developed but not finalized during that financial year as a result of various challenges in terms of us reaching consensus with the industry on how best would we be able to provide for that sector in respect of fishing rights, bearing in mind that the policy, in terms of the current policies, the long-term fishing rights allocation process, honorable members, had made us, or it had arrived at issuing permits or giving rights in respect of the total fish that would be available for fishing. And now for the new category of fishers, who would have to be able to create space for them to fish without necessarily achieving overfishing or resulting in overfishing. And because of all those constraints, we've had court battles with, for instance, the West Coast Rock Lobster Association, and we had not been able then to finalize the policy in that financial year, and we're still currently engaging in those processes through NEDLAC and other consultation forums with the industry. In respect of tourism, we were to achieve the implementation of skills initiatives as recommended during the 2006-07 financial year out of the skills audit that was conducted. Our target was 50%, and we therefore implemented the skills initiatives, and that at least accounted to an achievement of about 85%. In respect of tour guiding, we were to train about 108 tour guides, and 138 was the number that was trained during that financial year. And the tourism satellite account was work in progress in that financial year, and 6 tables were populated in that financial year. But that is still ongoing work that currently is happening within this financial year. 10% of SMMEs were to be supported through the Tourism Enterprise Program. They are about 31.2 SMMEs supported. And in respect of that, I mean, the number is actually 4,166 compared to the year, the previous year that was reported on. And the areas of training, the DDG can dwell more on those areas if members are interested to know more about those support areas that the Tourism Enterprise Program has made a contribution to. In respect of information centers, we have developed tourism information centers in 5 of the 2010 host cities, and we would hope that the municipalities would be able to continue to maintain or run those established information centers beyond 2010, as they are critical elements of providing information for whoever tours our country or visits the country. In respect of the number of graded establishments, we had a target of 5,544, and we have achieved 5,484, which are valid for 1 year, and there were delays in the renewal and for the various other establishments during the reported financial year. And the challenges around the grading system, maybe members, at some point we can come and make a detailed presentation on how we are dealing with the challenges in respect of both ensuring that the quality is maintained after even the establishment is graded. BE status verification system was also achieved, whilst also in respect of reporting in compliance with the BE codes. We have a report for the tourism industry, but we were still awaiting DTI to gazette the BEE, final BEE code during that financial year, which they published last in this current financial year. In respect of the accommodation web-based booking system for 2010, that was achieved during the financial year. The biodiversity and conservation branch or focus area of the department, we were to develop a national biodiversity framework, which was achieved in the current financial year, and the provinces have agreed with it, and MINMEC has signed off on it in this current financial year. Norms and standards for biodiversity management plans for species were also finalized during that year in question, and this is supposed to assist with some level of uniformity across provinces in respect of what is contained in a biodiversity management plan. The environmental risk assessment framework for genetically modified organisms was also finalized, honorable members. And then the regulations on bioprospecting and access and benefit sharing were also published during the year in question. There are implementation challenges in the current financial year, but those we can report on or we can give you the details at a later stage. Coming to the transfrontier conservation areas, we have, during that year, the Matamata and Sandal Drift border facilities were operationalized, and we declared one national park, which is Mugala, during the year in question. The protected area expansion plan or strategy was concluded in that financial year, which is a strategy that seeks to look at what are the under-conserved areas and how do we then deal with those so that we have a representative sample of protected areas in respect of the species that require protection in the country. We declared, we were supposed to declare 7 wild heritage sites. We have achieved 5 during the financial year, and the 2 were awaiting a ministerial decision to declare at the time. They were then subsequently declared in the later financial year, which is the current financial year. We have appointed management authorities for the Restersveld, Makapan, Taung, and Ukashamba World Heritage Sites. And then in respect of the next branch, which is Sector Services and International Relations, the information management component of that had to make sure that we have GIS mapping of tourism graded facilities. We have about 5,000 establishments mapped through the GIS system, and there is further work that's happening in this current financial year. And in respect of the integration of sustainable development and environmental objectives within local government through the IDP process, we focused on six metros and small and two towns or cities in respect of making sure that we had environmentally sound information on the IDPs of those municipalities in order to achieve better sustainable management within local government. In respect of job creation, in respect of the social responsibility projects, we achieved 29,000 temporary jobs in the year in question, in comparison with a target of 14,000. And permanent jobs, we had a target of 600, but we only realized 430 permanent jobs due to the expansion or the extension of time for some of the projects, because in respect of this program, permanent jobs are only realized at the end of the project cycle, when the department's funding comes to an end and the new owner or the whether it's a municipality that would be running the project for beyond implementation, they would then maintain the jobs that would be related to running the facility, if it's a tourism facility. Training, we also implemented a training program through the expanded public works framework, and also realized 523 SMMEs that were involved with both training and implementation of those projects. In respect of the international negotiations, there were various negotiation meetings that the department participated on, out of which we had to get either cabinet approval of positions, which then becomes the framework for the negotiators. And 67% then of those sessions that were attended, where we then achieved what ideally could have been achieved within the mandate of the that was approved by cabinet. And CSD 15 was one session or one international meeting where there was a collapse, and we did not quite realize what we would have wanted to realize in our engagement as South Africa. CITES,
what collapsed, did you?
Sorry, I'm talking about the CSD, CSD 15. We can give you more details. I can talk more on exactly what happened during the negotiations. CSD 15, the focus on that year was on agriculture, climate change. Can you talk to it? Yeah. Oh, can we talk to it later on, Honourable Member? Okay. Then on CITES, we had a partial success in respect of what was contained on the mandate that our delegates had for CITES, and maybe honourable members, even currently in respect of a trade on it's ivory trade. I'm thinking about the elephant. Ivory trade. There was a regime that was then approved at CITES, which was not quite in line with the position that we wanted in South Africa. And we can dwell more on what we learned in terms of what weakened our position in respect of those negotiations. In respect of the donor or resource mobilization through donors, multilateral and bilateral agreements that we have with our international counterparts, we realized $27 through multilateral agreements and $8 US. It's $8 million US. Uh-huh. It's $8 million US through our bilateral engagements. And these are funds that, I mean, partly one could, is what we classify as the donor funds. And honorable members, during that financial year, we made a presentation on the donor, what the status was of our donors, and in also in respect of our donor mobilization strategy. Those funds don't all come to DIT. Those are resources that we get for the functions of the sector, and they go through various agencies. Some go directly to provinces and to local government, and some also do come to us in terms of our technical support programs. So that is what we have realized, or we had realized during that financial year. And then in respect of corporate affairs, we were targeting at increasing our media coverage just to create more awareness about tourism and environmental issues. We managed to reach about 64% of media coverage. In respect of employment equity targets implementation, we achieved 1.7% towards our target, meeting our target on disability, which has proved to be quite a challenge in respect of us as a department reaching the 2% target. And we had put in place actions that would ensure that we meet the 2% target even in this current financial year. We can dwell on those various initiatives that we've embarked upon as a department because of our seriousness to achieve that target. And then on women, we have achieved 47% when our target was 48%, so we still had 1% to reach in respect of women on management positions within the department from a 38% baseline. In respect of procurement, BEE procurement, we have achieved 56%, and that is the normal BEE procurement that's aligned to the preferential procurement framework of the National Treasury, because the BEE codes had not been necessarily applicable in this case. We're still working on alignment between the National Treasury and DTI. They were looking at how best to align the BEE codes with the procurement policy of the National Treasury, because we don't want to implement a policy which is going to result in us getting audit queries in respect of the implementation thereof. On our internships program, we had taken on board 91 interns during that financial year from a target of 65 interns. So we had 9 interns that were working actively within the department, and we were also putting instruments in place to ensure that there is value that they get as they learn working within the department. As on learnerships, we achieved 62%, or 62 out of 100, which is 62%, and this was also because environmental learnerships, there were resource constraints. We're not getting money from necessarily CETAs. This was through directly through our budget, and therefore we could not reach our target in respect of learnerships. And then on turnover, as a department, we were still struggling with the turnover rate. From 25% baseline, we still improved a bit to 22%, and we think that the 14% target was quite over ambitious of us. And then in respect of the vacancy rate, we have improved from 28% to 21%. And our service delivery improvement plan, honorable members, in terms of our availability to the members of the public, 48 hours turnaround time for the call center response, that we have achieved, and we have not had complaints in this area per se. And in respect of the provision of service to 70 people per day through the walk-in centers, our walk-in center is operational, and of course what we have not been able to do is to operate beyond working hours because, again, of resource constraints. But people can come into the office and they can call 48, within 48 hours we would be able to respond if they leave a message over on the voice machine. And in respect of acknowledging written requests, 5 days turnaround has been the norm, and unless we have to do investigations, but generally there is a response that reaches the members of the public when they inquire, send written inquiries. And then in respect of prior requests, 30 days turnaround, we do where there is those areas where people want information that can also at times have, I mean, there is legal compliance that there is information that at times, from time to time, we don't think is proper to make available, and we do then still deal with those within 30 days and be able to provide response time as expected.
Sir, refresh my memory on the acronym PIA.
It's what information at
the Promotion of Access to Information Act.
Yeah. Promotion of Access to Information Act, honourable members. So I also I'm used to the shorthand, and one forgets the importance of the full terminology, use of the full name. But in the annual report, we do have the terms explained, honourable members. Okay, and then on fishing permits issued within 7 days, we have made progress of at least 87% of those permits are processed within 7 days. We still have a few that we are unable to process within the timeline, depending on complexities. Then coming to the actual annual financial statements of the annual report, again, honourable members, I do want to draw your attention to the fact that the information that we provide is basically what is in the annual report, and the format is what we get from the National Treasury. So we respond to the format as presented to us by the National Treasury. The Auditor General's report, we had an unqualified audit report and some matters of emphasis in that during that financial year. We had 155,000 that was irregular, and because the proper procurement processes were not followed. However, those matters, the responsible managers were then given warning letters. Other matters of non-compliance related to our compliance with legislation in respect of reporting yearly to Parliament on our international environmental instruments for which the Department is responsible for. We did submit the report, but it was not submitted on time, honourable members, and we seek to improve in that or on that. And then in respect of the audit committee, accepted and concurred with the conclusions of the Auditor General on our annual financial statements. And the committee was of the opinion that the audited financial statements fairly represented the position and performance of the department, based on the audit done and the report that was provided to the Auditor General. In respect of then the budgets and the expenditure, the picture, honourable members, for the 2007-08 financial year, we have a column that reflects the programs and the budget column and the expenditure column and what the difference is in respect of what we spent relative to the budget that we were given. On administration, we spent 99.2%, so we remained with 1.5. And then on biodiversity and conservation, 202,000 was not spent, and the rest of the programs we spent 100%. And in total, we therefore spent our budget 2.79, and we spent 2.788 billion, and in percentage terms, 99.94% of our budget was spent. So as we cry for resources saying that we don't have enough money, I think that during the year in question, we demonstrated our ability to spend and spend the resources efficiently and in line with the E&E or in terms of our economic classification as provided for by the National Treasury. Thank you, honourable members. I would at this point then ask whether I should ask SANParks and the others to present or should we first deal with the DIT presentation.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps one would like to get guidance from the members. Do we need to speak to what the DG has just said, or perhaps do we have the whole presentation and note down our concerns?
I think, Chairperson, let's skip interrogating the general report by the DG and go straight into the individual reports.
Okay, thank you. So we're in your hands. Thank you.
SANParks, you ready? Okay, Mr. Musola would then take us through the SA Tourism annual report presentation. Honourable members, thank you.
Chairperson and honourable members, good morning. And again, Happy New Year. Certainly hope is good for all of you, but most importantly for our country this year. Chairperson, we are also meeting at the time when the economic environment is very difficult. But in a very classic South African style, yesterday the South African cricket team walloped the Australians. And just to give us something very nice to smile about. Chairperson, in terms of my presentation, the agenda is fairly simple. I will take honourable members through the summary of SA Tourism 07-08 annual financial statement, quick recap of South African tourism objectives and delivery against the objectives, and of course the challenges that we face moving forward. If you look at corporate governance and internal controls, honourable members, South African tourism, of course, is regarded as one of the most complex entities by the Auditor General simply because we are operating in 15 different countries, dealing with 15 different currencies. And as a result, obviously, we are always very vulnerable to the exchange movement around the world. Despite that, Chairperson, South African tourism achieved the seventh consecutive unqualified report, no matters of emphasis, by the Auditor General. Thank you. Excuse me. SA Tourism again we spend 100% of the 657 million budget, only ended up with 23.5 million surplus, simply because of certain expenses such as website expenses and trademarks that had to be capitalized in terms of international accounting standards. Because of this unrealized foreign exchange process, the Treasury agreed for all of this money to be rolled over in 2008-2009. And I think at this point I should also indicate, Chair, that we are also able to meet our target of 43% BEE procurement against the target of 40%. Again, members, you must remember that the most of our money we spend in foreign currency in countries. But of that money that we spend in South Africa, 43% of it we met our target. Just to remind members, South African tourism is obligated by this House to contribute to sustainable GDP growth by making sure that most of our tourists spend as much money as possible here. Of course, contribute to sustainable job creation and to continue to play a role in the redistribution transformation of the tourism industry. Against that, there are four key objectives that we are working toward: achieving a targeted total arrivals to South Africa between 2007, looking forward to next year, 2010, achieve a total average spend 2007 to 2010 to be the most preferred tourist brand by 2014, and of course the best tourism organization in 2010. In achieving those, there are some six things that we do where we share and spend a lot of time sharing our vision with our stakeholders, which of course would also include this House. Use the trade to grow our business. We work very closely with the tourism trade to be able to make sure that people understand and can buy South Africa as a destination. Grow and nature our staff. Tourism is about people. And because it's be a people intensive, we dedicate a lot of resources making sure that that our people are educated properly. Improving brand traction in market. We are in the branding business. People buy brands. We continue to invest quite significantly in awareness of South Africa so that people can actually buy South Africa as a preferred destination. And of course, we continue to improve our systems internally to make sure that we are world-class in what we do, and increasing value extraction in South Africa from all tourists. And by that, we mean once they arrive in South Africa, we make sure that the only money that they have in their pocket, members, is to get back to the airport. And how they get home on the other side, quite frankly, we don't really participate in that. Can we go to the next slide, please? In terms of that, 2008, the estimate that we are looking forward, members, tourism will grow when we close 2008 at least by 4.3% over 2007. That will take the number to 9,481,762 tourists that will have arrived in South Africa in the previous year. But we also give you an indication of our targets moving forward. We will reach about 9.8 this year at the end of 2009. Which indicates a 3.6%. And of course, we will reach the big number, members. Keep our finger crossed, and with a little bit of prayer, 10.2 million by 2010. I'll come back to this point, but you can see what's happening there. We grew at 6.7 in 2008, in 2007. So 6.7. We're going down to 4.3. And we're going down again to 3.6. So you can see that the rate of growth is actually starting to slow down. And that is largely due to actually the economic environment. But you can see again we start to pick up again in slightly in 2010. This just indicates, it just takes you back in terms of like where we're coming from. Sometimes we actually really forget But I think what is important about this slide, if you look at 1990, that's really when tourism starts to grow to South Africa. And this really augurs very well. Democracy is good for travel and tourism. Most importantly, political stability, because people want to leave their home and go far away so that they can actually be able to enjoy the time and feel that they're safe. And you can see, members, since 1990, we have never really looked backwards. So tourism continued to grow in leaps and in bounds. And as we said, by the end of 2008, we will have reached 9.4 million. Just to give members a sense of where these people are coming from, you will notice that Africa continues to be very strong at about 8%. Africa land, 5.4%. Americas at 0.6%. What's starting to realize, our members, is that Europe is very flat at 0.2%, and indeed Asia and Australia have actually gone down by 2.7%. And this really is largely purely the result of the current economic environment. The overall growth, as I said earlier, is 4.3%. The other important number, members, is that, honourable members, while the rate of growth has slowed down, we have seen a massive increase in the spend. Now, if you look at that 2008 target, we were targeting and expecting that per traveller to South Africa, they will spend about 7,300 rands per person. Indeed, when we close our books, they are actually 9,300. Person. So even though the rate is slower of growth, but actually the spend has increased by a whopping number of about 33%, which is quite a very significant number. We're quite happy about that. So we really have moved from an expected growth of about 70 billion to 88. But then we also give members a good idea of our forward targets and prediction in terms of like how they spend is going to pan out. Again, if you look actually where most of the spend is coming from, all foreign tourists, I mean, if you look, it's about 32.9%. But the biggest growth, as you can see, is air market. So those people who are actually really coming through our international airports from overseas, they're spending a lot of money in South Africa. There was a growth in the land markets of about 12.1%, but really the significant growth comes out of the air market. We say that we want SA Tourism to be one of the best organizations by 2010. We received about 16 accolades in the calendar under review 2008. Just to mention very few because the list is long, the European CEO Magazine Awards, basically voted South Africa as the Tourism Board of the Year for its outstanding effort in marketing South Africa as a destination. The World Travel Awards voted South African Tourism named the best destination marketing organization in Africa, and Indaba named Indaba as Africa's leading travel exhibition. We're quite happily looking forward, members, that the International Olympic Committee awarded South Africa as a host for International Olympic Committee's 123rd Congress in Durban in 2011. This actually quite augurs very well. We are investing a whole lot of money in 2010. One of the things that we've had to start to think about already is how to sustain that level of investment beyond 2010. And sport is actually quite a very important one. And we're quite very happy to be able to be awarded this Congress in 2011 in Durban. Members, unfortunately, we are meeting, as I said, under very, very difficult global and economic conditions for travel and tourism worldwide. The United Nations World Tourism Organization, they are forecasting the growth for 2009 between 0% and 2%. The IPK forecast, which is also another international tourism body, indicates a negative outlook with growth between 0% to minus are 2%. However, we also know the current downturn is not expected to impact the desire to travel. People will still want to travel. However, because of the economic conditions, people will wait and see. When people are fighting their homes, members, the last thing on their mind is obviously to travel. The next page just shows you that according to the ITB World Trends, which is the international tourism boss, the effects of global economic and financial crisis, coupled with the uneasiness over prices for raw materials and significant rate fluctuations, mean that no reliable forecast can currently be made, which is where it leaves us, as you can see there, that the UNWTO 2009 of zero. What is worrying about this picture, as you can see again, we're moving from 6 to 2 to almost minus 2. Now, this is the kind of environment that we're going to be trading in, certainly in the next few years. Even further worrying, members, is that the GDP focus is forecast to decrease by 1% in 2009. Now, GDP decrease of 1% in global terms is massive, and it will definitely affect our sector one way or the other. The news is not getting better. Occupancy rates across the, most regions dropped in 2008. Whether Africa and Middle East will be able to sustain the high occupancy level is questioned as demand is not focused to meet the supply. So while Africa continued to be actually quite doing much better than most insofar as occupancy rate, though it is not really guaranteed moving forward. Now, what does this mean for South Africa? It is important to note that in the next few years, travel to South Africa will be largely driven by Africa as the international market completely flattens out. The Treasury has issued instructions now that the overall budget in the next 3 years needs to be reduced by $17 billion. The parastatals such as us, we will be experiencing a cut of 0.7% this year, 1% in the next year, and additional 1% in the outer year. Having said that, there are some massive opportunities in this year that we are quite excited about. South Africa will be hosting Australia from next month for another 6 weeks of thrashing. We will be holding elections. Now, elections for us in the tourism business are a good business. In fact, if it was for us, we'd be having elections every year. Because whereas people go around the country doing rallies, launching manifestos, hotels are full in those cities, you know, people fly across the country. So for tourism, elections is a very good business. So it will also help us to be able to really, in terms of like just really softening the blow. The British Lion Tour is here in South Africa in June and July this year. The significant point of that is that I met with them while I was in London in November at the WTM. They are at least expecting to bring 30,000 British with them, the UK citizens. Now, in this environment, that's exactly what you need. Otherwise, this is the 30,000 number of people that we could not be getting. The Confederations Cup in June, and of course, we have the final FIFA draw for 2010 here in Cape Town in November this year. Members, the global tourism environment is no longer the same. For us at SA Tourism, therefore, it cannot be business as usual. Real decline in our tourism budget of about 78 million. This excludes the restructuring and possible retrenchment costs. I may not have any choice whatsoever but close some offices this year. The situation is dire. I will be meeting with my board next month. I will be looking at options. I'm meeting with my chairman on the 2nd of February. I'll be putting some options on the table. We cannot operate the kind of machinery with a budget shortfall as big as that. If we include retrenchment and probably restructuring costs, we are looking at about 100 million rand that we had last year that we do not have this year. So the situation is very serious, and we may not have choice unless something happens. We may have to close some operations. There will be a need to revisit South Africa's tourism overall strategy and make hard choices about where we actually cut our operations in terms of moving forward. In terms of the challenges, there is a huge pressure on government revenue and allocation towards tourism promotion at the moment. The continued crime, our perception of South Africa as unsafe, also continue to be a key issue for us. The pressure from the tourism industry. December was not a good month, so is January. The occupancies are very low, and what happens during this time, the industry panics. And there is an enormous pressure then that comes as a result of that once people are not filling their rooms. We are in the process of implementing a new brand moving forward. We're just quite concerned about the implication for that particular finances because it's a massive project. We have to work smarter, we understand, with less resources and to be able to do more. This is just giving you an indication of the shortfalls across the portfolios around the world. Total expected shortage is about 78. America's portfolio is 18.5. Europe portfolio is 29. Asia is 13.9. Africa is 5.9. And global media deal. We committed ourselves last year forward buying a 250 global television deal. Those contracts are signed. So those are not the ones that we cannot get out of. We're going to have to actually really be able to honor those contracts on the table. I'm not here to try to make a budget speech, members, but just to give you a fair picture of what the situation is that we are dealing with so that you are very much aware of what the situation is. But not least, 2009 for us in tourism is going to be a very important year, and I suspect also for you, because it is this year that tourism companies are expected to report on the BEE status. So we will be really relying on members to bring those companies before the House so that we can be able to name and shame. Because you remember the BEE strategy gave them about a 5-year period to get their house in order. That was in 2004. Now this year is a reporting year. And in October, we should be releasing an important to show what has happened in the industry in the last 5 years. We really appreciate the support of the House. Thank you very much, DG.
Thanks. SANPARK CEO Dr. Mabunda will be presenting their annual report. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DG. Honorable members, let me start by thanking you for giving us the opportunity to share with us in terms of the highlights from our annual report. We're coming out of the biblical 7 fat years, and we are starting on the 7 lean years with a reduction in terms of our visitor numbers. We're seeing a trend that is worrying, and we have decided not only to shorten or tighten the belt, but also to embark on a weight reduction program so that the belt fits, if it does fit. Our management philosophy on managing the protected area system is still a whole systems approach, ecosystems approach, and we are really trying to strike the balance. We no longer manage species for the sake of managing species, but we're looking at the whole system, people included, and managing the system for desired outcomes. So that is the background against which all the programs that we are reporting on in the annual report is based. Our objective really is to maintain balance You don't want to see elephants only, but you want to see the rivers flowing, you want to see the vegetation thriving, you want to see almost everything in peaceful coexistence with each other. Chair, I'll focus in terms of the report on pages 79 to 96 and really highlight some of the key objectives, predetermined objectives in terms of their performance. As we all know, land is the bedrock of conservation. Without land, it's impossible to practice the conservation business. And therefore, our key objective is to expand the conservation estate. And against that objective, that key performance area, we've made the following performance targets. Although the Kwakwa Nature Reserve, in terms of the period under review, was not a successful story, we have subsequently signed an agreement with the Free State to include Kwakwa Nature Reserve as part of the Golden Gate Highlands National Park. So we turned a negative into a positive. The area between the Groen and Spoeg rivers in Namakwa National Park, which forms a 55-kilometer coastline admiralty zone, is now part of Namakwa National Park, which links the highlands with the sea as a contiguous park containing both a marine and a terrestrial park territory. Ado National Park, we still have a challenge in terms of the inclusion of the 120 hectares marine protected area. And of course, the associated challenges around issues of poaching in that area. The Garden Route National Park was delayed under the period that we are reviewing, but subsequently we've made progress in that, and the department has proclaimed that national park, proposed national park, which will be an amalgamation of Naisna Wilderness and many Tsitsikamma and many other provincial protected areas in between. So park expansion is definitely underway. We've added about 13,000 hectares against a target of 24,000 hectares due to delays caused by disputes in terms of prices and all related issues. It's not an easy, straightforward thing. It's not just a given. It's got to be negotiated. It depends on goodwill of both the sellers and the buyers, and it's always a challenge to acquire land. It's so important in terms of our conservation program to strengthen our science knowledge, conservation science knowledge, and effectively we've done quite a number of work, of projects under this objective. And Chairperson, we are vigilant in terms of the developments around issues that are not even naked, apparent to the naked eye, such as the massive dying of crocodiles in the Olifants River Gorge. It's as a result of our monitoring program that we were able to pick up that problem, and unfortunately we have not yet resolved, we have not yet determined what caused the killing of those or the death of those crocodiles in the Olifants River Gorge. But we continue to expand our scientific knowledge program with a node that links us with other research institutions such as SEMBI and universities. The State of Biodiversity Report is a continuous monitoring program which gives us baselines in terms of the various national parks that we are managing. And in the period under review, we have achieved up to 80% in terms of identifying what we, in simple language, call worry levels. But if you want to be a little bit sophisticated, we call it thresholds of potential concerns. Each park must have a set of indicators that tells us there's a problem looming in a particular area, and we've developed about 80% of those water levels. It becomes easier to monitor developments that you may not be aware of if there is a monitoring system. And we hope to increase that to 100%. Alien invasives continue to be a scourge, and we have cleared 125 hectares in all parks, and that is almost 100% achievement, Chairperson. Moving on the people and conservation objective, we had planned to take through 90,000 learners through our various environmental education programs, but as fate would have it, we succeeded in bringing close to 140,000 learners, and as such, exceeding the target by 35,000. If we educate our own children to be responsible adults or citizens who respect the environment, our task will be much easier in years to come. Conservation will not be doing its best in terms of being a national practice if it does not also contribute to socio-economic development. And as a result of the existence of the protected area system, management system, we have created opportunities to cover jobs that we've created, and also to create small and medium enterprises, 285 against a target of 149, and thus exceeding that number by 47.7%. Land restitution continues to be a challenge. Probably the DG would speak to that at a later stage during the questioning time. I don't think I'm qualified enough to deal with that challenge, DG. Honourable members, the National Parks Week, which is an awareness program that we run every year, has grown by leaps and bounds, and we achieved almost 98%. This time we took it to the different parts of the country, even where we don't have national parks, just to create that awareness which people should appreciate in terms of the protection of the environment. And it was during this period that the National Energy Efficiency Agency was encouraged, when we also outlined our energy efficiency objectives, and they then approached our minister, who subsequently announced a 500 million grant that would be spent over 3 years. Honourable Chairperson, unfortunately, we are still waiting for the money, as the National Energy Efficiency seems to be suffering from amnesia, and they've forgotten about this money which they pledged. We haven't received. We drew the programs up. They are still there. We don't want to put the department under pressure, because it was the National Energy Efficiency Agency's pledge that they will give us this money, but it hasn't come. The area of tourism, Simsula, my partner in this crime, we are pleased that in terms of the year-on-year growth, we've achieved a 7.5% growth, and in terms of the budget, we exceeded it by 3%. But as I indicated in the opening of the presentation, this might be the last time perhaps we report this kind of positive results, because of the prevalent financial situation. And as I've indicated, we are seeing a decrease of about 5.6% to 6%. The luxury lodges in the country are reporting anything between 8% and 12% decrease in terms of their arrivals. Although the occupancy rates have gone up in terms of the period under review, with the achievement of almost a 71% unit occupancy. Overall, visitors in the last period grew by 2.9%, and we were just under a percent short on target. The marriage off with match did take place, Mr. Msula, although I know it hit the rocks at a later stage. But we have signed an agreement with match. We refused to take their terms. We insisted on our own terms in terms of the accommodation that they required. We gave them specific camps at a rate that it would have accumulated to us by the time the games are staged, because we know that we are guaranteed those visitors, it's South Africans during the June-July school holidays. So we were not compromising. So that agreement is in place with match. And we've selected a few camps that we have sold upfront to match, but the rest of the park will be available to the South African public, because we know that to them this is like going to Moria every year. Chairperson, something that this committee is always consistent about and would like to be updated on is the whole issue of black visitors visiting parks. How many is it growing? What is happening? We are pleased to report that we've really achieved a 21.4% against 18% last year in terms of black visitors frequenting our parks. But a statistic that we never had is that of black visitors that stay overnight in the parks. And that is at 36.5%. That is what we, for the first time that we have this statistic. We will then compare it next year to see how we have done. And then, of course, visitors, day visitors, have a 19% or 20% growth in terms of day visitors. And that is as a result of us providing day visitor facilities where people can go into a park, enjoy their braai, do a game drive, and then come back and take a dive in a swimming pool. We have not found any reason why or any correlation between negative impacts on biodiversity and having swimming pools in parks. So we do have those parks, those swimming pools in the parks. Wildcats, a stunning growth there of 11.2%, Chairperson, and of course earning in that revenue line about 35 million. And mainly these are South Africans buying a greatly reduced access wild card so that the whole family could visit a park nearby or all the parks. Very few overseas visitors hold these cards. They are bought mainly by South Africans. Again, it emphasizes the objective of access to their heritage. In terms of finance and corporate governance, Chairperson, we continue to receive unqualified reports, not even matters of emphasis or important remarks by the AG. It's basically a clean report. And of course, in terms of improving income to cost ratio to see the performance of the various units in the organization, we have achieved 1% more than the set target of 80%. Increase in gross operating revenue, again we've achieved an 8% there, 1% more than what we had thought we would get, which is positive. And all in terms of alternative revenues, we continue, Chairperson, to look at opportunities, simple opportunities that could mean increasing our revenue streams, because we realize that the assets that we have can, in a way, generate additional income where possible. But if we were to make a choice in terms of what comes first, revenue or protecting the environment, we would choose protecting the environment. Broad-based transformation, 100% achievement in terms of all subcategories of transformation. The expanded public works program has delivered incredible results. we could have done all this, Chairperson, particularly the infrastructure upgrading, improvement of roads, working for water, and we would have used machinery to achieve those expensive machinery and do them within the shortest possible space of time. But we understand that these are problems that were created to increase job opportunities for people, and therefore they are more labor intensive than mechanized. And the milestones speak for themselves. We continue to build constituencies for parks. We know we have a history that is unpalatable to many communities, not only in South Africa but around the world. People were moved from their indigenous homes to make way for wildlife, and that legacy is being reversed by creating a constituency for conservation. We've created park forums for all our parks, and we engage with communities on various issues, including recently the compilation of our management plans. HIV/AIDS is also a reality with our employees, and we have a program called Know Your Status. It's a campaign. It's not only a status-based campaign. It also assists people to access assistance in terms of medical interventions from the relevant authorities. But our parks are situated in remote areas, and therefore we assist our employees to access those facilities, and we continue to do well under the circumstances. The tourism infrastructure replacement framework is in place, and we have achieved 75% of targets. Chairperson, we have an aging infrastructure. Our parks were established many years ago, many of them around 1926 and the 30s, and infrastructure continues to be a debilitating effect to attract our visitors, and therefore unless we focus on that program, we would continue to have problems. So we have achieved 75% improvement in as far as that program is concerned. With those highlights, Chairperson, I would want to rest our case, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Mabunda. Before we could take any questions, we would allow the DG to make further presentations on the budget. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just in respect of the topical issues that you probably have been reading about in the media, particularly around rhino poaching, and I just want to talk about that quickly and give you a briefing, as well as then the issue of the land claims in the Kruger National Park in particular. In respect of rhino poaching, we have statistics that reflect a threat to this species, and we have an estimate of about 197 rhinos that were hunted in 2007 during the hunting season. And South African rhino population is quite low, and it's estimated at about 14,800. With 13,500 white rhinos and 1,300 black rhinos. And as because of the various challenges around poaching, there was then various actions that we had to take as a department together with SANParks. On the law enforcement side, SANParks have established a technical task force with other provincial authorities, as well as other law enforcement agencies in the country, SAPS and so on, and that has resulted in the latest arrests of people that have been found to be involved as a syndicate on rhino poaching, and I'm not going to dwell then into the details, but that is concerted effort from our side to try and find ways of busting poaching. Over and above that, in terms of regulations, the Threatened and Protected Species Regulations, which were published on the 1st of February this year by the Minister, it does make compulsory provisions for instance, identifying the horns through microchipping, so that whatever is found without being labeled per se, if it's not marked, then we know that those are horns that have been possessed in an illegal form, and there is permitting provisions that have been made through those regulations. So as much as we still have challenges around how we implement the regulations in respect of the capacity across the board, but there is various actions that as a department we have taken forward in respect of making sure that that species is protected. Then I just also wanted to mention that when I indicated that we had a sale of ivory, which was undertaken before the end of the year, November, December, and that stock that we had, I mean, we had to follow the whole process as it is regulated in terms of the CITES agreements. And the whole sale, I mean, was involving buyers. It was China and Japan. And we think that it went on well. I mean, we had a successful ivory sale, and the money or the proceeds that would then accrue from that would be used to strengthen conservation of elephants. And we're looking then at that elephant conservation program for the country, which would also benefit some of the provinces that participated, but in particular also the national parks and the communities around those parks. It is in terms of CITES that we use the funds on that basis, so that honorable members, when we report or when you look at the annual reports for the coming financial years, those are the kinds of things that can explain how then the expenditure would be dealt with going forward. Lastly, honorable members, I also thought I should just give you an indication that in terms of land claims, there's still a number of land claims that have not been settled in protected areas, and in particular, in Kruger, we had about 34 claimants over and above the Makuleke claim that was settled. And those actually would account for more than 60% of the hectareage that we are responsible for in Kruger. The department then, the minister in particular, took the matter to cabinet for a discussion. Since 2006, there's been discussions between the two ministers, Minister of Detailed Land Affairs, and they were unable to reach consensus because we were requesting as the department that the settlement, we should look at the option of equitable redress instead of a title deed settlement for Kruger. And it is a sensitive and emotive issue that we used the basis that one, Kruger is an iconic park, and it more than even just the people that are staying around Kruger, it's a national asset and it's also an international icon, and it is going to be quite tricky to have titles restored with 34 communities and have a management authority that will be able to run the park together and considering the aspirations of those communities. And we were then suggesting that equitable redress, which would be both the financial compensation as well as development and projects that could be of sustainable contribution to those communities, should be the way to go. and Cabinet agreed to or approved that decision, and it is something that I think is not a matter about electioneering, we hope, because people would think that we are being insensitive to the rights of people and those rights being restored. But it is also from experience that it is not as easy as we thought, that you can find a way to give a title and still be able to manage the protected area to the standard at which it's supposed to be run. And we have had the Makuleke dispensation, which emulated a kind of a framework or a model that could work, but in later years also it has proved to be very challenging, and we can provide details from both sides, both from the community trusts themselves and even ourselves, because it is not possible to have development that is unlimited within a protected area, and even the proceeds that the community would expect out of running a park aren't just enough for us to be able to manage and run the protected areas sufficiently, because as the two CEOs have indicated, the budget is not growing. We are not getting more money for running operations for conservation, let alone for promoting tourism. So we have that decision, which in case you hear about it, when there is various press statements, I thought I should just mention to the honourable members that we are now in a process. The two DGs, the cabinet said the DGs must then consult with the communities and provide them with information in respect of what would then be the implications of the decisions and how best then do we take their aspirations around various development initiatives that they would want to see happening within and around the park itself. And as SANParks, as an authority, there would be introduction of various things like a levy that would therefore benefit, a community levy that would therefore be used towards development for those communities or the key beneficiaries in terms of the claimants. So those are the three things that I wanted to highlight, Honourable Chair, which can be topical and maybe are topical within our sector in these trying times. Lastly, in respect of the presentations on the annual reports of 2007-08, I just wanted to reflect the slide that shows the budgets and the all the allocations or transfers that the department made to its public entities. Is the one with the public entities go on? So, yeah. Next. There is the slide. So this is a budget that the actual transfer that was given for MLRF, that is MCM, it was 147,815 million, weather services received 180,112, South African tourism for marketing 517 million in total. And then SANParks is 364,356, and then SANB 123,196. Just for you to understand that this is the grant from the department side, and then the rest of what they've reflected in their financial statements is more the revenue that they generate themselves. Thank you, honourable members. I hope that you will be able to approve our annual reports. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, for your thought-provoking presentation on the budget together with your team. I think on behalf of the Portfolio Committee, I would like to thank Dr. Mabunda for the standing efforts that they are doing on the Rhino Anti-Poaching Program. So that proves once more that, yes, together we can. So with that, I would open the floor to the members with some questions. Gareth, Tate Mokoena, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Galala thereafter. Thank you.
Yes, no, I'm certainly happy to approve the annual reports. I mean, this department and its and those entities that report to it have, for a while, with the exception of the MRLF, which this year did well, and that I'm not sure if that's going to have its own presentation, but of course that is one particular highlight, is that the MRLF did get a unqualified report this year. So all good, and it's fantastic that this department spends its money, 99.9% of it. I do have a couple of questions. I mean, we all appreciate the very nature of, we're actually looking at a report that ended 10 months ago. So, of course, there are always things that are relevant nowadays. And I'd like to ask a few of those. Seeing as if you brought, that you brought it up on the rhino poaching, yes, very good news that people are talking to each other. I'm very interested, though, whether we're actually talking to our neighbours and what they're doing about it. A fascinating thing about this presentation today, which is very different from presentations before, and it's a good time to reflect back on 5 years on this committee now. 5 years ago, you couldn't go to a portfolio committee meeting without hearing about how wonderful our peace parks were. And these were the greatest things. Integration was happening. Doors were opening. Lodges being built. You just don't hear about it anymore. I'm not saying it's not happening. Of course it's happening. But where is this on our agenda? Because, you know, and just before the DG's time, I used to do a lot of questioning on this particular thing. The reality is that Gonarezou is destroyed, and I would be interested for anyone to come back at that. Granted, it's not linked to the park yet, but there is very, very little there. To go the rhino poaching is that, yes, it's fine to increase enforcement and so on in our parks between our people, between the different conservation departments, but are the actual borders of South Africa being guarded sufficiently enough? There was a moratorium on individual rhino horns last year. It was very sensible, very sensible. And, I mean, presumably we can police our major ports and harbours very, very well. But are we doing enough to obviously stop the transport of horns across the country for illegal export from other ports? There's a static protocol on conservation, and are our neighbours actually enforcing it? Because that could possibly be a loophole here as well. On tourism, I have great respect for SA Tourism. I get a lump in my throat every time I see a SA Tourism advert on Sky News or anything like that. They're quite phenomenal. I've always liked them, and I'm very proud to see them. And it's sad, of course, that there are these shortfalls which are somewhat beyond your control, and I wish you were making a budget speech because you deserve that money. But you know the question I'm going to ask. I asked it you a year ago, and I'll have to ask it again. And that is, are we making any progress with improving the statistic keeping of tourists entering South Africa? Because I remain skeptical of the figures that are presented to us in terms of whether they are actual tourists. I accept that the 10 million people, there are 9 million people that are spending money in our country, and it's a bonus for our economy. No problem there. That's a great thing. But are they spending that one required night in South Africa, which would really make them a tourist? Because a year ago, you made it quite clear that we're not good enough yet at capturing those statistics. And therefore, every time, I mean, I take great pride in our tourism. We're the greatest country in the world to visit. But every time I see those statistics put forward by the minister, and I think I caught the end of it yesterday, I think he was doing it again, I just disbelieve it, you know, because you have all the great figures and that 10 million, and we seem so fixated on that figure, and we could probably miss actually all the various growth markets somewhere underneath it. So are we making progress there? That's my second question. A third part, and I realize they report to the Department of Labor, but I'm growing increasingly worried, and it relates to Dr. Mabunda, the DG, and SA Tourism, increasingly worried about the performance of the FITA. I now have a number of theta employees talking to me quietly on the side about the problems going on in that organization. Some of those I'll pursue through other channels. But to give you one example, and I'm surprised we didn't say more about the 499 days to go to the World Cup today. But to give it one example of why I'm worried, and I realize you guys aren't the theta, but there's some work that needs to be done here. If you look at that massive grant given by the theta to the district municipality in the Free State very recently, it was in the City Press last Sunday. Okay. Now, there's a massive problem with that happening. One is because they're supposed to grow tourist guides and skills and all of the rest of it. But there's a fundamental problem here. Is that grant that's given to a district municipality, municipalities have their own CETA anyway. They have a local government CETA. Why must they be getting money from levies that are paid by the hospitality, gamers, tourism, conservation, and all of that? Because the big players, the true contributors, Sun International, Gold Circle, and all the other 43,000 people that pay into that fund at the moment, are not getting the benefit. And here it's going to a district municipality in the Free State, which is not, would apologize to anyone from the Free State, very important area for tourism, and I love it greatly. But what happens when the other district municipalities say, come and give us the money? It's not a fair system. And there is a big problem going on here. And Dr. Mabunda, I mean, my sources tell me as well that good stuff is being done on your adult basic education. One person said that TETA are doing it. But that there are massive terms about who you use as service providers, that you can't choose who your service providers are. That is a possible problem as well. But the main point I'm making here is that the value is not being added in it. And while they aren't here to defend themselves and I accept it, it actually affects everyone here. So I ask nothing more for comments, or you may choose to stay quiet because you aren't obliged to do it. But it is a major problem with. It's actually not about the World Cup. It's actually about long-term sustainability. That this organisation is not doing its work. I'll leave it there for the moment. Thanks.
Ntate Mokoena, then Mazigalala, and yeah. Then Makosi.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I'm delighted.
Then Machamas, in that order, thank you.
I'm delighted to have sat here and listened to the report, the general report on DEET, especially the two branches, SA Tourism and SANParks. Most of the issues are very common, and we're very familiar with them. You're just rehashing them for the sake of the format of the report. There are a number of challenges. Number one, let me start with the questions. The question would be the MLRF. I'm delighted, as my colleague has said here, that there's been a turnaround in terms of the audit. They don't have a qualified report audit anymore. I want to know, what is it that they got right, apart from the suggestions of the portfolio committee all along? What is it that they got right? The purpose of this, the excuse of this question is that now, we do not want them to have a relapse now, right? And then the committee has got to go to SCOPA again and say, you got it right, but what actually happened? Because we're going to do oversight. It mustn't just be a gimmicky getting right of the audit for the previous year. We must ensure that this getting right of the audit is sustainable. That's number one. Number two, DG and Dr. Mabunda, the land question is very serious, and I think we each have personally got an obligation. The term of office of this parliament is coming to an end. Parliament is going to be prorogued. Now, we don't have time, but I think what we should do, those who are going to come back here, we'll have to pay close attention to the question of land. We have succeeded with South African Weather Services to pursue the idea of a title deed, which Public Works was playing games and not giving them. Not about it. We had to insist that SOAS needed that title deed. Now, what we must do now, it's a different kettle of fish, but it's very critical, you know, because some parts cannot operate looking over the shoulder all the time on this question of land claims. We should have an audit. I hear Dr. Mobina says there are 34 of them. We should have a strategy of actually making sure that we bring this thing to an end once and for all. And if there are partnerships, amicable partnerships to be formed like it happened with them and like a clan, then we should do that. And if there are adversarial disputes, then we should actually find the money to pay the people out and know that now the territorial jurisdiction of Sand Park is what it is now. When it's true of Crucial Park, that's the actual land that belongs to them, and they should do another thing. And I think we should also link up with the Land Commission. Get Mr. Impasse there. I mean, this gentleman here, a blessing, to actually come to this meeting. So now we should have an integrated approach to this question of land claims. Instead of 10 parts trying to do it on their own, we must bring the land commissioner on board so that now the land, the left hand must know what the right hand is doing. Because there might be some people making some false claims or playing games. They go to the Land Claims Commission, they say something else, they come to you and blackmail you, etc. So we must make sure that we close all those loopholes. On the question of the transfacial TNFCAs, I want to know, cholera is largely affecting humans. But I want to know, Dr. Mabunda, you are an expert in this, and to what extent is the death of crocodiles attributed to perhaps the fact that Matthias Suef had this dispensation of opening the parks, and then there's the migration of animals, etc., etc. Now, the pollution of the water and all the diseases, the migration, etc., etc. What control measures are there to ensure that we don't have these TLCFAs, you know, becoming vulnerable? We had good intentions to open all these parks and had something very big, but then we have unintended consequences of these diseases. And I want to find out, because cholera is now the prevalent malady, to what extent is it the contributory factor to the problems we're having with the death of the crocodiles? On the question of, I'm sorry, I must hold the stage. But let me leave the other questions, Chairperson, because they're more of a peripheral nature, because it will be a yes or no answer. But let's come now to the germane question of the budget. I think we as Parliament have got an obligation to bail out SA Tourism and St. Parks and anybody else, because we are faced with a very important event of 2010. It cannot be heard of that you know, you are retrenching staff, et cetera, all these things. So we have an opportunity to do that because of this global economic crunch that started in the West. We are lucky to have escaped this country, but the ripple effects are also catching up with us. But we have a noble event which is coming up in 2010, and we cannot countenance the possibility of all these people, 3 million people coming here, hearing stories that certain offices are closed because of right-sizing and downsizing. It will be unforgivable. So we need to quantify how much money do you need to tidy over between 9 and 2010 so that we can deal with the other consequences, but ensure that the wheels don't come off, economically speaking. We need to do that. We have a big budget coming from the state that's going to be made by the National Treasurer. And I want to know if that speech is going to be informed by the budgetary deficit you require. Because you see, we do not want to have a traditional budget that is speech tabled, and then the wheels come off, and then we're going to have a supplementary budget in September, where only then the next financial minister of finance, says, oh, I was not aware they needed this. So we need an urgent intervention to bring to National Treasury your economic financial needs, so that Mr. Mannion can incorporate those in his budget speech as a bailout plan. We don't have to sensitize it like the bailout plan globally, but I mean, here it's going to be like an overriding switch when the car cannot start, etc., etc., but you can override the switch. You understand? So it's going to be an overriding switch, financial mechanism.
Thank you, Tate Mkwena, Mazigalala, Makosi, my chairman in that order. Thank you.
Chairperson, it's about tourism. It is encouraging to see that the industry is really doing well, as far as I'm concerned. Though there are times when things just go down, but the fact remains that the tourism, I feel very much proud whenever I listen and see what is going on. Mr. Masul, you made mention of you people educating people about certain things that pertaining the industry, but I did not hear precisely what are those lessons about, and how do you conduct them? Because at times I worry. I get into the layman's shoe, not a parliamentarian, whereby you speak of sustainable. What does the word sustainable mean? To a layman, it's something else. And once he doesn't understand, the word sustainable is lost. He will fail to follow the whole, you know, subject. And one of the slides did show the slowdown of progress. And I just want to know from you, how does that come about and what can be done just to help this wonderful industry to grow more? And I believe the industry is going to excel come 2010, really. I have no doubt. That's the last thing. I would like to know from you, from the horse's mouth, how is the domestic tourism? How are the South African people responding to it? Because I feel it is very important to know how is domestic tourism going. Sanpats, Mr. Mabunda, it was interesting to listen to your presentation, but I, for one, I have interest to know about Addo Elephant, National Elephant Park. How are things? The activities that take place there. Secondly, I would like to know from you, how are animals protected from the different national parks? Is there any intimidation of some kind at a certain stage? I wonder. I just want to know from you. Thank you.
We'll have Makosi, Machamas, Freelings, and Manzanga in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DG. Thank you so much for your presentation and your team. I had the pain and the outcry of the budget. Firstly, by Mr. Masol, from our tourism. And we're looking at tourism as one of the pillars of the economy of this country. Baba Mokoena covered that one, but I'm of a view that this should be attended with immediate effect. And again, I think Mr. Mabunda was in the same pool. I've got just slightly things to for clarities here. Your norms and standards for biodiversity management plans for species finalized. That's good. But I wanted to check DG and your team in terms of the impact of fires that we had probably last year throughout the country on our species, as to how do we manage that one, and how what strategy sort of do we have in place? Because I believe that we had that disaster on that one. The regulations on alien plants and species. Now, the public comments, I wonder how your program is stretched to reach the ordinary people on the ground. Because there is a lot of damage on the ground, and you'll find that our people don't even understand how these alien plant sort of species are sort of dangerous to our own environment. Comrade, Mr. Mso, I was a bit excited when you mentioned your 408 permanent jobs for social relief, but again, when you lamented at the end of your presentation to say now it lies to the treasurer, if the management is being retrenched and reduced, that means we are also going to lose sight on such a good work that you've mentioned here. But I was going to say it's not enough. Yes, I was excited, but it's not enough, because you go to these hospitality places and you find people that will tell you that it's been a casual for probably 5 years. If we can also do the follow-up on that one. Training of 160,000 and having more days, and I'm looking at this training as to say, yes, we did, we achieved the training. And then what? Shortly on that one. And DG, 47 women achieved on management. I believe our basis is now on 50. That's not where we lie, but this is our basis. But I wanted to check as well on this one, the exact demographics, to say, are they balancing? But it's quite a promising number. If it's 47, that means we are going to achieve the 50 and above with the look of things. But the demographics, are they talking
to the demographics of the country. 100 environmental learnerships. On this one, you were quite right to say you are struggling to get the learners. But I wanted to sort of check as to, do you have any strategy and tactics as to how to attract learners on the ground on this one? Because I still believe we're still lacking on this one. I think those are the few. Oh, lastly, is the 48-hour turnout time for call centers. I'm wondering if these centers are linked to our weather services as well. I'm just checking, because if it's around that, because we've been discussing and debating this issue of dissemination of the information. I'm from Western Natal, and I'm saying this in pain, because we've been having disasters one upon another. To say, really, do we have, is it really working on the ground, or administratively we've achieved it? Because to me, things that we had, Gobo Molweni, Gobo Potchefstroom, you name them, somebody says, you begin to say, is our department serious? It's not going to be the national department only. What is the monitoring on the legislation? And how is the partnership, what is the partnership between the department and the municipalities to sort of achieve such things? Thank you.
Thank you. That's Chalmers, Feilings, Manzanga, in that order. We've got about 50 minutes to wrap up.
I'll be
that
brief.
Includes responses from the department as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I will be brief. So one is just a question to Dr. Mabunda, and it's a little bit, it ties into what Honourable Morgan was saying about the Peace Park, the Frontier Conservation Areas, which, as he says, were launched with so many accolades some many years ago. I just wondered, well, how do they work in terms of, and this has to do with revenue around with gate fees. I mean, how are those shared among participants who are participating frontier conservation area countries? Does it actually, is there something useful happening there? And the other thing I'd like to ask is, and this is also something I can remember 10 years ago under the previous minister going in a helicopter at Addo and being shown with so much excitement and pride the marine protected area that was going to become a part of Addo. And it still has not yet happened. And I would just like to, it may not be the time and the place now, but I'd like to know why. And then a question around marine and coastal management to do with the subsistence fisheries policy, which continues to be a festering sore in the whole aspect of fishing in this country. It's a bit like a mini Zimbabwe, actually. There's so little consensus there. And I just wondered, is there any thinking when now that we hear that the aquaculture and mariculture policies have been developed, and I just wondered, what is the interaction? And it could impact hugely on the finances of the fishing industry, when you're looking at subsistence, the management of subsistence fisheries, is it being considered the whole aspect of aquaculture and how it's going to fit in, and can it not be part of, because of the lack of fish in the sea, part of what coastal communities are doing and thinking. Thank you,
Machamas. Khrelengs, Manzanga, and Korai in that order.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll also be brief. Two queries. The one on sand parks, you mentioned the Working for Water program and the Working for Wetlands program and that. I was just wondering what's happened with the Working for Energy program. I know it probably doesn't fall under you, but I just think that it's a huge opportunity to use that biomass from the Working for Water program to create energy. I've seen some estimates of 900 megawatts in that, and there are plans. I just want to know if there's been any progress in terms of pushing that forward. Then just on the kind of tourism side, I must say I share Honourable Morgan's sentiments. I think every time I see those adverts, I feel very proud as a South African. I think you've done a great job. What I'm interested in, though, is the kind of breakdown of tourism as well, much the same as Honourable Morgan. But why I ask that specifically is I'd also be interested to know how big the backpacking tourists are in South Africa. And I ask that because I know that Australia, for instance, has put a major focus on backpackers and are trying to attract backpackers to their country. And that has actually built a very sustainable tourism industry because backpackers tend to come back when they're older and they become middle-class tourists and that as well. I was just wondering what specific programs we have in place in terms of encouraging backpacking and whether it is a growing market in South Africa. And then just lastly on tourism, just to kind of bring two different elements of the department together, I mean, obviously climate change is a big issue for the department, and of course tourism is a big contributor to climate change, and I think it's even a threat because I think a lot of European tourists are starting to question whether there should be tourists and whether they're contributing to climate change. Are we looking at this at all in terms of fair trade around tourism, around either carbon offsetting or something around it? Are we looking at this as a threat, and how are we going to combat that? Thank you.
Manzanga, thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, mine is on our new heritage sites, Mapungubwe and Baviaanskloof. What I would like to know is, are tourists attracted to those sites? Do they visit the sites to go and see our new heritage sites? And again, Chairperson, still on tourism, and the tourist guides that were trained for the World Summit, are those guides going to be used for 2010, or is it not necessary? It won't be necessary for 2010 to be tourists to guided during the matches. And then Chairperson on schools, African schools in Soweto. Is tourism introduced in schools in Soweto? That I would really like to know, because I think it is very important for young people to know on what it means when we speak about tourism from school age. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right.
Chairman, thank you. Mine is only about the strikes of the fishermen in Eastern Cape. Is the department aware of the strike at the New Pratt in Eastern Cape? This I met these people when I was there doing the ANC work, and from their correspondence, this strike started last year since the 5th of September. Till date, there are people who are still on strike in that area. And is there any intervention that has been made by the department about that strike? They've sent me or faxed me a lot of their grievances, which I think after giving to the chairperson, will give it to the department to respond. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Maybe before we could give the department an opportunity to respond, I've got three questions, one from Marine and Coastal, two from Corporate Affairs. Let's say from Marine and Coastal, the SEDEC patrols, I'd like to know what contribution are our SEDEC partners doing, giving towards such patrols, if any? If not, why are they not contributing? Because this is to the benefit of the entire region as a whole. And the other two questions on the corporate affairs, one is on the issue of disabilities. I see that you have realized the 1.7% achievement on that. I'd like to know, how are you going about trying to solicit candidates from disabled organizations? Do you get in touch with them, or do you simply just advertise and hope that they would respond? And the other question would be on the 100 environmental learnerships. What is the duration of those learnership programs? And if they are completed, what then happens to those learners? Thank you. Sorry about that one. I normally don't take back what I give. Dr. Kachalia would be the very last one, and all members would have had an opportunity to ask questions. Thank you.
Some very, very short questions, really. The first one is, I believe people from India had difficulty in accessing visas to come to this country. I wonder if you could identify the problem and what is being done about it. The second question relates to, I think, three SADC patrols. They said there is one patrol and resource constraints, the fuel costs. Now these patrols play a very important role in monitoring our waters. And shouldn't, when budgeting for these patrols, shouldn't that be focused into the equations, exchange rates and inflation or what have you? And then lastly, the tourist information centers. Where are these located? Are they easily accessible to tourists, and are they manned by friendly and knowledgeable staff? Thank you very much.
Thank you. You've got 40 minutes amongst yourselves to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll deal with some of the questions after Mr. Musola will deal with the tourism related question. Alf will deal with the climate change and link to tourism. And Dr. Mayekiso, MPA question with and on ADO, as well as Dr. Mabunda, and all the other questions that are related to the voyages, Dr. Mayekis. So it will be myself now. Temoketsi, Musola, Alf, Dr. Mabunda, Dr. Mayekiso, Isham, in that order. Then maybe Deb in the end, if there's still time. All right, let me just start. Honorable members, Honorable Member Morgan, on the issue of the TFCAs and the PPF, which is Peace Park Foundation, is linked to Honourable Member Chalmers' question. I think that program, there's always been enthusiasm about the Peace Parks program, and especially for conservation, and it's been mainly our sector contribution or in respect of what we are involved in the environmental program within SADC. And basically, I think that has not died, but there are challenges. I would first just indicate what is it that we are continuing to do and it's also covered generally in our reports. We are still working with the neighboring countries and through the Transfrontier Conservation Program and through the other programs that MCM is involved in on patrols. And there is a border coordinating committee which is led by the justice cluster within government, which we participate in, which is more a joint cluster that involves Home Affairs, the police, and ourselves, and even Foreign Affairs. But be that as it may, and we have various forums on economic. There is an economic joint a forum where the ministers of the economic cluster meet with their SADC counterparts from time to time, I think once or two times a year. And we also have other joint initiatives that we are involved with them through those various structures. But the key is that regardless of what we've put in place, I mean, on border development, when we're putting up the infrastructure for the transfrontier conservation areas, mostly the money had to be coming from the South African side, more than the neighboring countries. And we are also not necessarily allowed to spend money in those countries. So there is still a need for greater capacity, technical support, and it's a function of a number of other things, and financial availability of the neighboring countries, because we have been trying to do our part within the limited resources that we have in respect of both patrols, in respect of enforcement, but also we have been involved in initiatives that would contribute to economic prosperity within those countries. And it is not as sustainable as we thought it would be if we continue to just spend money. We recently, then last year, had an investor conference, which was more looking at the infrastructure on the other side of our borders in the TFCA program. And as South Africa, then we were facilitating a process by which we could have streamlined, I mean, information availability, whether it's legal requirements of that country, the tax laws, and so on and so on, that would then was then packaged as an information pack for investors to look at in terms of the trying to then get their appetite to go and invest in on the neighboring countries, including also partly to, on the South African side. So that's something that I would say is ongoing. We will be happy when we see investors putting money or making their commitments in the various parts of the transfrontier conservation areas. In respect of the conservation function itself, the Peace Parks Foundation has been working with us, and SANParks in particular, on various initiatives. Again, I mean, they've been paying salaries of some technical experts that would work in those countries. And again, at some point, even staff that works within those protected areas, including Gonorozo, there are problems, and I don't think they can sustain that themselves, because even the Peace Parks Foundation does not have a limitless bottom in respect of resources that are available. So the programs are still, I think we're still highly enthusiastic about them, and we are doing as much as it is possible to do with the capacity and the resources that we have as a country. And that does link to the question that was asked also by the chair on the SADC patrols, and Dr. Mike will talk about what are those other countries contributing. For the Transfrontier Conservation Program, for the investor conference, we had some contributions. We were wanting at least Botswana and others to put in some resources, because we think their economies can afford this. And we did see some money, but I cannot now have, I don't have all the details of who has paid what in respect of that. And then on the question on land claims from the Honourable Member Mukwena, We are working with the commissioners, land claims commissioner, and we have an MOU between the department and the commissioner, and how we resolve the various challenges that we encounter in respect of settlement of land claims in the various protected areas is something that we're working on through that memorandum of agreement. In respect of the Khalakhadi, maybe I had an example that I was given by my colleagues, which they can talk to on the TFCA, that we've recently operationalized the Khalakhadi Transfrontier Conservation Area, and it has contributed to some level of increase in terms of tourists that come from Botswana and Namibia, and we think that we're making headway there, but there are still challenges of insufficient accommodation. So we deal with one part of infrastructure requirements, and we still have a lack in the other areas. So this is why I'm saying this is ongoing work that we will continue to pursue. Then, in respect of the question on informal Sikalala tourism, okay, domestic tourism, that should be dealt with by Mwekezi. And then on the matter of budget outcry, honourable members, I have made presentations to Treasury. It is true that they've cut all departments because of the international financial crisis. And for government then to still be able to do its business, but without growing the debt in terms of budget deficit, they had to do a responsible thing by making all government departments to cut. And we have been asked to cut significantly also as a department across the board. And they made a particular demand that we must cut entities across the board. The DIT entities, I have made submissions to Treasury last week Friday, and subsequently yesterday they then agreed that we must not cut. They agreed that I must cut elsewhere in the department, but not cut then the entities. But that still leaves the entities with a challenge because even that growth in their operational budget, it was not CPIX aligned. It is just a small growth. I think SA Tourism would be around 2% or 4% in this year, 2.1, and same parts, they were saying it's about 2.2. So we still have the challenge, but I think under the circumstances, from where I'm sitting, I understand also where Treasury comes from, and we cannot pretend as if there is not something that we have to deal with in terms of our protecting at least the economy of the country. And with the projected slight growth of 1%, we have to do to belt tighten as the departments and including the entities. So I cannot be asking for a blanket acquittal from that application of the rule, because it has to be applied across the board. But at least for our entities, they have agreed that we should therefore not cut them. And then in the last, my last comment, and then I will give over to the colleagues, is related to the learnership. I was saying, honourable member, the issue of learnership, the reason why we are not quite meeting the target is not necessarily the non-availability of learners. It is more up on the system itself, because learnerships, you have to do them through a SETA. And it's one of the challenges in respect of who has got the curricula. And we're talking about learnerships that are also related to particularly to the environment sector. If we're talking ecology or a learnership on conservation, it's, for instance, a learnership that would give you a qualification of, is it N2F 7, for instance. where are the service providers that are available? They are not available across the country. There may be two or three accredited service providers that can provide that training. And then who then provides the support and so on, who is the employer? Because for learnership, you must place a person with a company, and then so that the person has got experiential learning as well as being able to then get then the classroom learning. So those are some of the technicalities that we have to deal with when we have to reach our targets on implementing learnerships, and also include over and above that the CETAs, especially the CETA, we still have some challenges in respect to the qualifications, availability of qualifications, as well as the support that they have to provide to assess, because they also have to have competent assessors that would then go and assess whether the people that have gone through the learnership have received adequate training and the service provider complied with the requirements. So those are some of the challenges we're grappling with, honourable members. Dr. Mayekiso would deal with the other issues that relate to the MLRF, but I think, honourable member, the key question that you're asking about what is it that we are doing, it's well and good we got a clean audit. We committed to maintain and also make sure that we beef up the capacity, the technical capacity for financial management within MCM. We appointed a CFO. We appointed other financial managers, because at the time we were dealing with their financial management function. We had brought a number of consultants on board, so we had outsourced the kind of support that was required. But then we have put in the kind of capacity internally, but still keeping some of the consultants to provide the necessary technical expertise. So it's training, it's getting the people to work in the financial management function and make sure that we then keep up with what is required in respect of the integrity of the financial management systems within the MLRF. So I would give over then to Mekezi and then Alf and Dr. Mabunda to follow through.
I thought you had requested your colleagues to respond
yes.
In a particular form. So let's go ahead with that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Morgan, on tourism statistics, I actually probably thought that you might have given the statistician general a call last year after we met, because actually things happened very rapidly and very quickly. I am very pleased to report that there has been a significant progress that has been made in terms of improving the quality of the collection of the statistics. To that effect, the report has been presented to MINMEC and MIPTEC in terms of the new definitions have been issued by StatsSA, and as you know correctly, that we've been waiting for about 3-4 years for those to be issued, which is fantastic. But what was very important, despite statistics being called a dismal science, is that actually we are very, very close in numbers. They ran unique visitors. So, for example, what they did, just to be able to determine what are the different percentages, how many people come in and leave the same day, how many people stay overnight, and also we're able now to pick up the whole issue of transit, so we can be able to pick it up, because now you start dealing with them based on their passports, and then you can pick it up and they come. The difference is so insignificant in terms of the overall numbers. We're quite pleased by that. So I can tell you that we are working with a very robust statistics, and the definitions now is starting to make those categories very clear. So next year when I come to you, I will tell you that one-day visitors out of Mozambique, So you will know this is the percentage of people who came in and out the same day. You will know out of Mozambique how many people stayed actually overnight in terms of number of days. And that is now the second thing. And I must tell you that we did for all markets, you know, around the world. So it's quite a very big program. And it is, of course, ongoing. Where there's still some delays and we're working with it is actually the issuing of statistics. You know, we're still working on a four-month period, which, as we have said before, is simply unacceptable given the speed with which things go. On domestic tourism, Honorable Zikalal, the issue of domestic tourism is a very important one. In fact, 37 million trips were undertaken by South Africans last year. Not only that, but we continue to be very, very strong in rolling out the Shortlift program, which is aimed at encouraging domestic travel to continue. So domestic is quite actually in a healthy state. Can we do more in this area? Of course, and we'll continue to do that. Insofar as skills in schools, today we have about 55,000 learners in our country studying tourism at the high school level. It's quite significant. And there is quite a significant number of the teachers now also who are studying to qualify in tourism as a subject. Because you remember what happened was, because tourism is a newcomer in our educational system, so we had teachers who had already qualified but they had never taken tourism as a subject. So they had to do special programs. Now we are now starting to have teachers who are graduating with tourism as a subject that they actually have specialized in, which actually augurs very well for the industry moving forward. Honorable Member Dr. Kachalia, insofar as visa is concerned, yes, we are aware of the issue in India insofar as the issue of visas, and we have addressed it. What we have done there, the biggest issue has always been security from a Home Affairs point of view. You know, Home Affairs, number one, is actually really making sure that they can be able to account for people coming into South Africa. And that's why it took too long to be able to process that. What we have agreed with Home Affairs in India, we have now pre-accredited about 12 major operators in the Indian market whom we have been doing business with for at least more than 5 years. And they go and they basically pre-approve a lot of their travelers that are coming to South Africa in terms of the application for visa. And they vet for those people. And that has actually really given Home Affairs a certain level of comfort in doing that. And this is both happening out of the Mumbai office and the Delhi office. And even in times when there has been a higher demand, such as last year, September, during the cricket, 2020 World Cup, we were able to address those issues. And of course, as it comes up, we continue to deal with it. The issue of the backpackers, mostly, in fact, come from our overseas market, which is out of continental Africa, and 28% of that market is actually backpacking market. It's about 640,000 people. It's quite a very good market. The good thing about the backpacking market, it is the lifetime value that they provide to South Africa, because, you know, they come here when they are young. In fact, the ages that you are looking at is between 18 and 30. They form very, very meaningful relationships. You know, once they finish university and they start working and they start to have families, they actually want to take their children to some of the places in the world that actually impacted them in one way or that. So the lifetime value of them is quite significant. So we are actually having programs that actually really deal with that. The challenge, though, which I must say, is that, you know, to be able to market one backpacker, and if you are looking at it in terms of rate of return, you might as well stay at the airport and give them tickets for free to South Africa. So it is one of those markets that you have to be extremely careful not to over-invest, because you actually get value over time and not within necessarily the period within which you are marketing, you know, to them. So it's one of those areas where you actually have to be very strategic about how to get and find very cost-effective ways to be able to get to them without necessarily overextending the limited resources that you have. And lastly, just in terms of the whole issue of global warming, tourism actually has been quite, tourism industry has been one of the leading industries in South Africa, just in terms of coming up with clean and renewable technologies in terms of energy efficiencies. More and more hotels that have been built now, you know, you'll find that actually when you get out of the room, the lights are, you know, off, you have a carter to come there in terms of saving that. We are working with the presidential task team on energy saving again to be able to make sure that more and more hotels can be able to really do that. But, Honorable Member, the truth of the matter is that we are still far, very, very far. I mean, there are countries in the tourism industry that when you get into the bathroom, it's dark. You know, in a hotel, and then because of movement, then it picks up, then the lights come in. We are not there yet. We need to get there. We need to get there fast. And it's something that we are starting to really address with the tourism industry. Thank you very much, DG.
Well, thank you, Chair. Maybe just to follow on what my colleague has just said. I mean, in real terms, tourism is under threat. The tourism climate change link produces two threats to the tourism industry. The first threat is from consumer-driven resistance, which has gotten a number of aspects to it. And the second threat is from unilateral action by states in our tourist-generating countries. Just to first deal with one disadvantage that we have is that we are a long-haul destination. And that creates consumer resistance from three different angles. The first angle is that is the carbon footprint of the transport. And it's not only the transport of the air ticket or the luxury liner cruiser that you arrive in South Africa on, but also the carbon footprint of our ground transport systems in the country. The second issue is the carbon footprint from our accommodation units and our tourism activities that they undergo when they're here. And the third part, and probably a most important part, is the perception internationally in developed countries or first world countries that South Africa as a developing country is doing nothing about climate change. And so we're a climate criminal in some circles. And really when you look at the solutions to that, on the transport front, the issue around aviation and maritime fuel requires a multilateral solution because it's about emissions which are taking place beyond the national jurisdictions of countries. So we are working and negotiating on a multilateral solution to the aviation and marine bunker fuel things. With regard to the domestic ground transport systems that in South Africa, I'm sure that as honourable members, you have received inputs from the Department of Transport regarding the road to rail and the complete transformation of South Africa's public transport system. And that with those things, along with some additional work that we are working with the Department of Transport, like biofuels, public transport on natural gas, and various other initiatives that they are looking at, would go a long way to changing those perceptions. With regard, I think my colleague picked up on some things that the tourism industry is doing with regard to the carbon footprint of the accommodation sector. But in real terms, I think the department is working proactively and maybe
we can give details of that, on a green grading program. So in other words, we want to create accommodation units that are branded green and can be demonstrated. And that's got to deal with lighting efficiencies, laundry, and all sorts of what's happening in the kitchen and all sorts of things. What is the unit doing with its waste, its recycling? So it's a broad-based program. But the advantage that we've got in South Africa is that many of our tourist activities can be branded as low carbon, nature based, and culture. And I'm sure that there needs to be some synergies around branding. And the third thing about the perception of us doing nothing has got three parts to it. The first part is it's important for us to complete our national climate policy. We have completed the long-term mitigation scenario planning process. We're having a climate change summit in March. And we are working, the DG is leading a program on bilateral sector department engagements on implementing and the possibilities of implementing that climate policy at a sector level. The second part of that is that South Africa needs to be progressive in the international climate negotiations. And I think that we're building up a fairly high-profile place in that. And the third part of that is actually a domestic environmental awareness and education program at school level. But also, more broadly, the ESCOM energy efficiency drive is a very effective contribution to that broader awareness program. The other issue around unilateral state action by other countries, I think the biggest threat here is the issue of cross-border tax adjustments, which has been considered by the EU first. But let me tell you, I've just come back from the USA. The USA is building cross-border tax adjustment provisions into all its legislation that is developing at the moment. So it's an anti-competitiveness issue, and largely it's an issue of competitiveness with China and India, but we'll fall in the crossfire. And I think that's a serious concern internationally. Just like to comment on your working on energy thing. I do agree. The problem with the working on using the biomass from the Working for Water program is the wide distribution of that program, and when you add the transport that you would have to put in, the emissions from the transport, it becomes a highly inefficient climate mitigation process. So you're kind of stuck with mobile charcoal, producing charcoal from mobile units, which would have a lower carbon emission profile, but it doesn't achieve the kind of scales that you were talking about. And I think the other part of that is the security of supply. So if you're going to build a biomass-driven plant, and you're working for water program, you run out of alien plant vegetation, where's your security of supply issue that you would need? I think it's probably much better to exploit our solar and wind resources rather than our biomass resources. As a dry country, our biomass production rate is a bit low. It doesn't compare with countries like Brazil in the tropics. Okay, I think that's it.
Thank you, TG. Honorable Chairperson, on the question by Honorable Morgan on theta in terms of the EBIT program, no, theta in terms of learnerships, we have 139 learnerships with theta. We would like to do more, and these are spread across the various core functions of national parks, in tourism, in people and conservation, and also in conservation, but we also have people in administration. The limiting effect, of course, is the availability of accommodation in our parks, and also senior staff to guide these young people, because we don't want them to run amok the whole day in the name of working but not knowing really what they're doing. So we want them to be under proper supervision and be taught something, you know, profitable to them and their future growth. So there we're doing quite well. We're just worried that there might be problems around getting more learnerships in the future. In terms of the ABET program, indeed it's doing quite well. We the reports of staff running away, purportedly of course running away from tourists when they ask questions to go and call someone that understands English. But then the interpretation of the tourists is that when you talk to this staff or cleaners or people in housekeeping, they run away from you. But in actual fact, they're not running away. They're going to call someone who understands English to come and interpret for them. So that has diminished. We don't have those problems anymore because of this adult education program, which is helping them to understand. We appoint our own service provider. We currently, on page 41, it's indicated in the annual report that we appointed People Management Solutions as a service provider. Honorable Mukwena, the issue of crocodiles dying in the gorge, the cause is a disease called pancreatitis, and it's the inflammation of the fat in the tail, which then causes the fat to harden, and that limits the mobility of the crocs. And as such, a crocodile that can't move is a crocodile that can't survive. Because the movement and maneuvering are quite important for it to survive in terms of catching prey, but also to it's a world of the survival of the fittest, and if you can't defend yourself, then it becomes difficult. We don't know yet what the cause is of pancreatitis. We know it is pancreatitis. There are many variables, and we don't want to speculate because it could be various pollutants that have entered the river over a very long period of time, and as such we are relying on this continuous monitoring program, which has also assisted us to pick up the cholera issue, but there is no correlation between cholera and the dying of the crocodiles. We have recently received reports from our teams on the ground that our rivers, all seven of them, have tested positive in the Kruger National Park to positive to cholera, but fortunately we don't drink directly from the rivers. There are water purification systems under the able guidance of Dr. Andrew Decon, and there's very thorough testing of the water, so tourists are not in danger. But we continue to monitor this because our borders are open. And it's a reality that parks can't be islands from their communities. ADO, Honorable Mazigalala, ADO is doing well as a park. In fact, it's our best performing park with occupancy of 85.1%. It's a growing park in terms of the terrestrial area, but also in terms of the marine protected area, Dr. Meiji, so we'll talk to that later. In terms of animal protection, indeed this is a challenge. We protect them through various levels. We have well-trained rangers around all our parks, and then we also have a team of detectives, if you like, who focus on collecting or gathering intelligence around poaching activities. And we work then beyond our borders. We work with SA Police Services, and the SAPS also provide us backup in terms of forensic science around these sites of criminal activities. It's a combination of all those efforts that have assisted us into breaking the back of the rhino poachers. So it really took about 8 to 9 months doing this investigation. So those are some of the examples of how we protect resources. In terms of the impact on fires, of fires on species, yes, we do have fires, and our fire regime management or fire ecology has evolved from a regime of where we allowed natural fires caused by lightning to burn their course to a situation where we intervene at certain points in time to reduce the biomass. Because a combination of a huge biomass, wind conditions, the humidity can result into a fire that can be unstoppable and create problems also to resident workers and other people that might be caught in such fires. But for animals, indeed, they do get caught from time to time in the crossfire, of the fire. But, you know, they've learned how to survive in those extreme conditions. So if the biomass is reduced, it even gives them a better chance. So the burn plot approach that we follow in our parks is assisting us to mitigate against grave impacts of our fires. The World Heritage Site on Mapungubwe, Honorable Manzanga. Mapungubwe is quite very popular to local people and international visitors. Of course, the challenge is getting there. It's quite a long haul to go to Mapungubwe, a good 6 hours on the road from Johannesburg. But we do attract about 22,000. Last year we did 22,801 tourists, and a large component of that was as a result of schools, the educational tours that we receive from different parts of the country. But yes, World Heritage Sites are very attractive because of their history, their uniqueness to international visitors and many other people. Gigi, I think I've covered all the areas.
Thank you. I will start with the question that was asked by Honorable Chalmers on ADO and the MPA. And I will start by making a declaration, Honorable Chalmers, that the department believes very strongly that there should be integration of management of the terrestrial part together with the management of the ocean part. In other words, MPA should be, in their management, be integrated with the terrestrial part of the park. And indeed, we are already doing that in a number of parks that are connected to marine protected areas. We indeed have a memorandum of understanding that we should be able to find soon on with sand parks. Honorable Chair, but it is also true that there's a string of MPAs that have been proposed. You will recall maybe 3 years ago, there was a proposal that will have an MPA in Prince Edward, we will have an MPA East London, Aliwal Shoal, Still Bay, and Namako. We have continued to make progress on those proposed MPAs. Just this year, we're able to proclaim Still Bay National Park. But we have to take them in sequence. We will work on proclamation of the ADO elephant, of the ADO MPA, and we will, of course, as usual, subject it to an assessment on the basis of criteria that are normally used in declare MPAs, but we would want to look at it as a matter of urgency. Then, Honorable Chalmers, you also asked a very difficult one, if I understand it. And I will start off by reiterating the statement that was made by the DG, that fishing rights were allocated in 2005, and most, if not all, of the species that are available were allocated. Now, these were allocated to the commercial sector. They are also exploited by the recreational sector, and there has to be a provision for the subsistence sector. Now, developing a policy for the subsistence sector under those conditions is extremely difficult. And as the DG indicated,
the West Coast Rock Lobster Association has said, well, if you write those kinds of words in your policy, then you're going to impact on us negatively and we'll take you to court. And they have. And there's a case on appeal as we are talking. So there are challenges, the two kinds of challenges. The fact that the resources are limited and the fact that we may run foul of the law, given that we made certain, not undertakings, but when you allocated somebody a right in 2005 for the next 10 years, can you easily revoke that right in order to accommodate other people? Well, the answer is not, that's not very easy, but you may be able to find a way of doing it. So policy development for subsistence fishing has all those difficulties, but the department has committed to finalizing the process in the next few months, and I do hope that we'll be able to. Then you linked your question, if I understood it, to whether aquaculture could come to the rescue. And the answer to that is the department is doing all that could be done in order to make that possible. The department at the moment is running a number of pilot projects which as a priority are looking at what sort of models could be used in order to include the kinds of communities or fishers you are referring to. But I think I should add the fact that it will not be plain sailing. The marine environment in South Africa is very hostile, so it is not easy to carry out aquaculture in the ocean. You need technology, which unfortunately needs a lot of money if you're going to do it. If you then choose to do marine aquaculture on land, it can be done successfully for abalone, for an example, and also it seems it's successful for some finfish. However, you would always be competing with golf courses. You would always be competing with real estate. And the local authorities have got to see your activity as more important before we can get to where we would want to be. Also, the capital required to run these farms is significant, and one would still need to find a way of solving that problem. So, short answer, the department is exploring ways of involving the communities in aquaculture. Then there was a question about whether the department is aware of the strike in the Eastern Cape. That strike, as I understand it, involves the squid industry. The answer to the question is yes, the department is aware, and it is aware that this is a labor relations matter, conditions of service, which we believe is in the domain of the Department of Labor. We do, however, have an interest, and we are looking at whether in the practices that have been highlighted, there is anything that conflicts with the MLRA, Marine Living Resources Act, or is there anything that is happening that the industry had promised wouldn't happen? So we're looking at that. As far as product patrols are concerned, we have done patrols up to Tanzania, we've done patrols to Mozambique, we've done patrols to Namibia. When it comes to Namibia, it is really a partnership. We use their vessel sometimes, and we use our vessel, so it's a equal partnership. When it comes to Mozambique, you would say it's an equal partnership. They have a fishery which they have to patrol over a limited period of time. So when we go and patrol it for or with them, it is paid for by Mozambicans. But we are looking at, Honourable Chair, at a long-term way of even our vessels being used right through the year. Because it doesn't help if our vessels lie in port because we do not have enough money to keep them at sea every day. So if our vessels are able to spend 20 days in Mozambican waters, working there, paid full by Mozambicans, we see that as positive. So we would want to pursue these partnerships or these joint patrols. However, we would never do it at the expense of our local needs. Then Dr. Kachalia's question, the answer is we usually put estimates of inflation when we put proposals before Treasury, but it is also true that in the years past, recent past, the petrol price or the diesel price did spike quite significantly, and I could say without warning. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I wonder if you'd indulge me. I had targeted that we should wrap up at 1. I have a meeting that I'm running late already. If there are any outstanding questions, we would appreciate if you'd forward them in writing to us. With that, I'm sorry, I would like to adjourn the meeting.
Honourable Chair, thank you.
And lunch is served outside. And tomorrow we are meeting at 10. Thank you.
Just, Honourable Chair, just to apologize for tomorrow. Myself and the DDGs will not be here. It will only be the CEO, Mr. Zuluma's office in Mangaliso, and the CEO of Weather Services, Dr. Makuleni, and Dr. Abrams for Sambi. They are here now, so they will continue tomorrow without us. Thanks.